Ground rules. So feel free to interrupt, but just with a hand up kind of thing. So I'd love questions during the talk. We're going to have some discussions and we're going to have some games. So to start out, we're going to have a game of probabilities. So has anyone here ever played Duck, Duck, Goose? Does anyone know who that is? Okay, so we're going to play an information style Duck, Duck, Goose. We're going to start with classical information style Duck, Duck, Goose. So here are the rules. We're going to have two people called observers, okay? And that requires two priors, okay? So prior information that they'll be given, either duck or goose. And then once they have those prior information pieces, we can make an outcome choice of either it or not it, okay? And so what I have is I've got cards to represent all these choices. So we have it. Okay, can everyone see that? And we have not it. Can everyone see? And we're going to have duck. So we've got a picture of a duck, and we have a goose. So I need two volunteers. So I saw that hand first there, and I think I saw your hand. So if you guys can come up. Yep, you got to come up. So you can't be a duck. You guys are going to be observers.
No.
No, you.
I'll come next time.
No. You can't be information. It's just kind of not how that works. So this is how this is going to work. So I'm going to give you guys each an it and not it card. Okay? So here's your pair, and here's your pair. So those are the choices you guys are allowed to make. Okay? And so what I have are the prior information cards. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you an envelope, and you get to choose on that. So do that at random, and you're going to do that choice over here. Okay, so if you stick one of those cards in the envelope and make it really secretive and hidden, don't show anybody. Okay, once you've made your choice of which is which, hand them back to me. Okay. Okay, so this is how this game's going to work. All right, so this is the first part of the game. So if both observers have the same prior, so if when they open these envelopes and they both see duck, okay, or they both see goose, they need to give me back the same outcome. So they need to both put it, or they need to both put in not it. But if they have different priors, okay, so if one has goose and one has duck, they need to correspondingly give different outcomes. Does that make sense? So, but here's the catch. They can't talk to each other once I give them their prior envelopes. Does that make sense? Okay, that counts as talking. You can't signal, you can't talk, you can't, you know, show stuff. Okay, so you just can't communicate with people. No fair, you guys are taller than me, I can't block. Okay, so you just can't do that, okay? So that's in some way communicating with each other. You guys are not allowed to communicate. You're isolated from each other. You're spatially separated. Okay, so what I'd like you guys to do is talk amongst yourselves and try and come up for a strategy in a way that they can always win. Okay, and you two have to discuss this before I give you your prior envelopes so that you can always win. So just chit-chat amongst yourselves and try and figure it out. So I'm going to give you guys each an envelope, and it'll have either duck or goose in it. So I'm going to give you an envelope, and I'm going to give you an envelope, and you're going to either put it or not. And then when I open up, then you're going to give the envelope back to me. You get to look at your envelope, and you get to look at yours. You don't get to look at it. You win when. So if when I look at your both envelopes, and you had duck and you had duck, you both put an it. Then you win. And then if you had duck and you had goose, no, then you need opposite of duck. Okay, so you have if you have not. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the guys at the front have come up with a strategy. How's everybody else doing out here? Good. Do you guys think most of you have a strategy? Yes?
Yeah.
No, don't say your strategies just yet. Don't say it. Let's see if they've got it. We're going to put them on the spot. All right. So at random, I'm going to give them an envelope. So this is very randomized. You've noticed I keep saying random. So your envelope, sir, and your envelope.
Here goes.
Drum roll, please. Okay. So we have duck and not it. Okay. Can you hold that one? And we have goose and it. All right, you guys can put it back in. Good job, guys. Good job. So, well, okay, actually, before you guys sit down, what was your strategy?
Okay, we thought if it's loose, it leaves me sound on the floor, right? So we should have the green one. Yeah, so this stuff is the red one, so we'll always
win. Okay, there you go. So, duck, so goose means it?
Yeah, goose is a good song.
So, for goose, you go to it, and duck is not it. Is that right? Okay, so that makes sense. Okay, so can I have two more volunteers? We're going to play another game. Okay, so I saw you and you. What do you mean before? Yeah, you keep. Yeah, they're allowed to work out a strategy. It's just as soon as they see, as soon as they open up their envelopes, they're not allowed to talk or communicate or in any way, shape, or form. That's what I mean by work out a strategy. All right, so here's our next game. So it's a little bit different, but not much. So now if they open up their envelopes and they have the same measurement, they need to have opposite outcomes. So if they both get duck, one should have it and one should have not it. Okay? Or if they both have goose, same thing. Okay. And and if they have different goose breeds, okay? So talk amongst yourselves, and I'm going to give you guys envelopes. Okay, guys. Okay. There you go. Do you want to pick one and put it in the envelope very quietly? And do you want to put one in the envelope very quietly? Thank you very much. I trust you. You guys ready? You're all ready? Okay, so I'm just going to give everyone a few more minutes to talk. So do you guys have a strategy over here? Yeah, you think you don't have to do it? We're good over here. Do you guys have a strategy? Yeah, everyone's good over here. We're good. Strategy over here? Yeah. You can ask them all the way back there. Good. Okay, does everyone have a strategy? Yeah, back there. You guys have a strategy? All worked out? Okay. All right. Okay, can we... Okay. So, does everyone more or less have a strategy? Yeah? You guys have a strategy? Okay. Go to your prior... Get your priors. You're not supposed to show everybody. Okay. Thank you. Oh, just another shoulder. Thank you very much. Stick this over here. All right. Now we have. Get a drum roll. So we have duck and not it. Can you hold that one? And we have goose and not it. So the winner. You guys want to explain your strategy? You don't want to explain your strategy? Do you want to explain your strategy?
It's the same strategy.
Okay, but can you explain it in this context?
Well, it's just in reverse. We decided he gets goose, he will say,
if I have duck, it's not it. If you have duck, it's it.
Is that pretty much the same strategy everybody else had? Yeah. Good stuff. Perfect. Okay, so we have one more game. It's an extra rule here. So I'm going to give you guys a second to think about this one before I ask for volunteers, because you might want to think about it before you volunteered. Any comments? Yeah, you can be it for goose and duck. But... You want to play?
Yeah.
All right, we got a taker. So we need one other taker. You're up. All right. All right, so you guys are going to play. So, gotta find my it, not it card. See if you get a not it. Not it for you. It. It. And you'll get envelopes in a second. So, you've already shuffled one. Let's see who we have. Here, you haven't shuffled one yet, have you? There you go. And just stick one of them in an envelope and don't show anybody. And you haven't shuffled one yet, have you? Can you pick one? Oh, sorry, have you put one in? Did you put one in? Thanks. You ready to go? You ready to try it? Not yet? Sorry?
I was commenting on the appropriate of Austin
and but A and B. Well, yeah, and actually, if you see the background of my screen, it's a picture of my dog. She's named Alice. Why are you guys doing this, guys? You know? How close have you gotten? You getting there? Okay. How's everybody doing some strategy? Anybody getting close? That's pretty good. That's very good. How are you guys doing on a strategy over here? How close? How long some of the time can you win? Try writing it out. You don't have any paper? Okay. So what did you say? I suggest you say that with more confidence. So can I just tell everyone to quiet for a second? So is everybody having a fair bit of trouble with this one? And you're getting close, but just not quite there? How close is everybody getting? There's something really similar going on here. So I pulled a little trick on you. It's impossible to get 100%. And you can only get to 75%. Yeah. Yeah. So this is why I didn't really want to pull up volunteers, because, yeah, you guys weren't coming.
Well, we were
you're going to get to 75%. Well, congratulations for that. You want to guys try it?
Yeah.
She's all right. Let's go for it. Let's go for it. So you guys have your strategy?
No, we're not.
Okay, well, Rachel, all right. So go for it. Here you go. It doesn't really matter, does it? Okay, so, well, so we have duck and it. So you can hold that.
Okay.
All right, and we have duck and it. So yay for it. Okay, so we've already answered this question. What's the best probability of winning this game? It's classically, it's going to be 75%. And we've seen that you guys have all got demonstrations of this. Is there anyone who doesn't see it? Please put up your hand, I'll show you. Okay, so we can see how that works. Awesome. So with quantum systems, though, we can actually beat this. We can do better than 75%. This should be really, really weird right about now. I should see jaws on the floor, yeah? Is anyone else just going, how? How? Entanglement. So this is what we're going to go through. So we're going to talk about entanglement for a little bit. So, because this is what allows for a lot of the weirdness of quantum mechanics and a lot of what allows the predictions of faster computing. But first I've got to go through some notation, some boring notation. So you've heard, I'm sure, the term tet. So in your lectures, I believe you've been talking about wave functions, is that correct? Yes, okay. So instead of talking about a wave function, I'm going to talk about kets. Okay? They're very simple. It's a different representation of the same thing. So I'm just going to be denoting them like this. Also, for people who are familiar with vectors, we can also represent wave functions as vectors. And so this is why we bring in this notation, is that there's a lot of formalism or mathematics that we bring this in for. So, but for the purposes of this lecture, let's just think of that as wave function or state. Okay? And the other thing I need to introduce is the idea of a tensor, or a tensor product. There's a lot of math going into this, but we don't need to think about that for right now. All we need to think of is, I have two states, or two quantum systems, and I need some way of thinking of both of them. Okay, and I want to consider them together in some way. And so my way of combining them is by using this tensor product. So we can just think of as I have my state A, and I have my state B, and I just stick this circle and a multiplication symbol in between them. And that's how I stick them together, okay? So just simple stick it all together kind of stuff, okay? But it's important to realize that it does keep them separated in some sense. So I can just act on the first system, or I can just act on the second, okay? So, because we can also have a wave function that is of the whole system. This is how we keep them stuck together and yet separated. Okay? So, the composite system I was just talking about. Every composite system can be represented in this manner, where these are special vectors called basis vectors. It's not entirely important what they are, just that they have certain properties. That again, for the purpose of this talk, is not really important. So all you really need to know is I have some vectors that pertain to the one system I'm talking about, and I have some vectors that talk about the other system I'm talking about, and that I can tensor them together. And I can kind of smush them together. And they make up this overall wave function that makes up the whole system. Okay? Now, how much this tensor kind of keeps them together or keeps them separate is what we start to talk about, the nature of entanglement, okay? Because of this coefficient. Now this is just a scalar. It's just a number like we're used to thinking about. So does anybody have any questions about the notation in math? Because I know that math is scary.
So
yeah. Yeah, it's not just five. It's not just on this first vector. It is actually on the whole thing.
Well, yeah.
It's just a scalar. Like it's. This is a general form, so it's not a specified parameter at this point. Or, and is everyone familiar with some notation? Or if there's any notation up here that no one recognizes? Yep. Which? Oh, is which part? Oh, they're just indices. So they sum over as much as you need them to, whether it's infinite or a smaller amount. So they can be finite or infinite. They're natural numbers, does that help?
Inside the big five, would they be like wave functional?
Oh, they would be like 1, 2, 3. So it could be the first energy level or the second energy level, things like that. But it's just, again, that's just sort of a way of saying it's that wave function or that wave function. I'll call that wave function 1, I'll call that 1, 2, I'll call that 1, dog, or I'll call that 1, cat. It's just a name or a label. So is everyone cool? Okay, because I just want to make sure that this is okay before I keep going. Because it gets uglier. So, separable states. This is really important to understanding entanglement. So, if we have the case where we have a total wave function over our system A, and we have a total wave function over our system B, and we've just smushed them together, and just kind of, we've tensored them together, and we have a wave function over the combination of systems, over both systems combined, and they're completely equal. And they have some of these certain properties. So, and this just basically means they can be broken down by these basis vectors. But basically, if you can separate it out like this, okay? So if you can kind of tear it apart and separate it, we call it a separable state. So the coefficients that we saw in the last slide. So if you can see that you'll have one part of this, you'll have one part that will end up with this I vector and one part of this C that will just end up exclusively with this J, and that it breaks apart into two distinct sections without any kind of jumbling together. Okay? That's what makes it separable. Okay? But this isn't always the case. If a state is not separable, it's entangled. Okay? So, sorry?
You missed the last part of the last.
What did I miss?
Oh,
you're still okay, I see. I'm writing it all day on, oh dear. Yes, you can find all these definitions on like Wikipedia. So it might be more important, rather than writing these kinds of things down, to just look at them right now. You can always get access to these notes later. I probably can find a way to email them all to you, things like this. So what I'd really like to make sure is that you guys are following what I'm talking about in terms of just kind of taking them apart and making sure that they're entirely distinct. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay. So if a state doesn't have that property where you can take it apart fully, and where it does have some that overlaps, that it is entangled. Okay? So we're going to start with an example. Is this state separable or entangled? Is your hand up? Or? Oh. Shoot, I changed notation on, didn't I? Okay, so. you're right, there should be a tensor product right in between these states. My bad. yeah, the plus is just the way you'd normally think of adding things. But it's just in between the A and B systems, normally you should get a tensor product. Often we get lazy and write things like this.
supposed to work 1,300 tensors?
You actually don't need to know what a tensor product is to be able to work it out. Okay. Well, here, I'll work it. So, one of the things we see here is that so if you sort of kind of recompile all the math here, and I'm just going to sort of sub in stuff from here, okay? I'm going to sub it back up. Does that make sense? Okay. So you'll get your sum back, ij. So what you'll do is if you gather these two parts, these C's together, you can see from the definition up there that that equals the Cij, and what we end up getting is this definition back from the last slide. Does that make sense? So what I'm asking with this kind of a question, is there a way from looking at this kind of a thing, can you break it back down into parts? One property that might be helpful to know with the tensor product is that it is a distributive property. So if you had something that, yeah, probably should say. So if you've got, so can everyone see that? Yep. So this is actually equal to this. Oops. So can everyone, does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. So can anyone tell me what the separable? So yeah. So does everyone agree that it's separable?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it is. And these are the actual separable parts that you get. Okay. Is this one separable or entangled? Entangled? Why do you say that? So, does everyone have an answer? So I think I heard your answer first. Yeah, so it is indeed entangled, which means I can't write down what I wrote down on the last slide, the two separate parts. So this is a really good an idea of an entangled state. So what does this math tell you? So I'm going to go back to the last slide. I'd like you to kind of look at this equation and tell me why this is weird. Because I can give you lots of reasons, but I'd like you to kind of look at it and interpret and tell me what makes this entangled state so different from the separable state that we were talking about. I don't mean mathematically. Mathematically, we've defined it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, what kind of physical reasoning would this give? Like, what kind of predictive ideas? And I think one of the key things to remember is that we are talking about two different systems.
It means like that, like, you can't separate if A be in one state or the other, and B can also be in the same state or the other, then you can't separate them. No, it's like A can be in one state.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. Sorry. Just keep trying. Keep going.
So
I think you're getting at something, but I just need to.
So
you mean if you physically separate them? Oh, you can't tell them apart. We assume that you can tell these systems apart because we've designated one of them as A system and one of them as B, and so we can physically separate them. Sorry? Exactly. There you go. So how one acts does depend on the other. So if we measure system A, for example, and see that it is in system 1, system B has to be in state 0. So does that seem strange to anyone? No? I don't care how many times you've heard about it, it should still seem strange. So, I mean, for example, with our card game, that would be the equivalent of one person looking in their envelope and it changing what's in the other person's envelope. That's strange. So, and that's kind of the idea of why entanglement is a very interesting and odd thing, and why it allows us to do things that are very different from what was classically allowed. And it also it has a tension then with relativity, because we can't have signaling. You know, we know there can't be some light signal being sent out between them. Like I said, there can't be the two people communicating what's in their envelope. But we know that there's something strange going on that we just can't quite explain at this point. So this is something that they do use at IQC. And they are trying to figure out more of what exactly to do with this entanglement thing. That we can't, it has a lot of tension with some of our other physical theories. And trying to make sense of it isn't classically intuitive anyway. And it should be, every time you hear about it, it should just raise another point of like, well, that doesn't really make sense. And so they are trying to reconcile it in a way that can give us a story that makes more sense and things like that. So any questions? No? Okay. So I'm going to move on to another feature that is used a lot at IQC. And this is spin. This is probably my favorite one. This one's really weird, and I really like it. And so we're going to talk about this for a few minutes. So this is the Stern-Gerlach setup. It's a very famous experiment that's used. So one of the things that they've done is that they had a furnace with and they'd send out silver atoms, okay? And they send it through a magnetic field, an inhomogeneous magnetic field, okay? And this was to observe magnetic properties of the particles, okay? So classically, what you'd expect is that when it gets to the screen here, that your particles, if there's any sort of magnetic moment, that the way it would deflect would be able to deflect in sort of any way. So sometimes it would deflect slightly, sometimes it would deflect a little bit more, and so that you'd get a continuum across your screen. Okay, does that make sense? But what we actually, what was actually observed was two distinct points. One up here and one down here. And this isn't something that could have been explained by any classical theory. This is now called, this now is a property of the electron or any subatomic particle that we call spin. And so what we say is that it has a spin up or a spin down with the with respect to the alignment of the magnetic field. This is weird. You know, like this shows some sort of inherent quantization, first of all, that we don't get some sort of, you know, because that means that with respect to this field, that electron or silver atom had to be either aligned or anti-aligned and nothing in between. Does that follow? Yeah? And what we discovered, though, was that it wasn't just with respect to one setup. It's that any way you orient this magnet or magnetic field, this was always true. So it seemed that this atom would react to any orientation of the magnetic field. So there's, in some sense, this intrinsic spin that is has this this behavior of being aligned one way or the other way in every single direction that we could possibly align our magnet, because there's no way that every single particle going through here is just perfectly aligned, kind of going along like this. So that's a very strange property. You know, you can't usually think of something having spin kind of spinning around this axis and this axis and this axis and this axis. So it's just not something we can classically think of. So it's important not to think of spin as just being something spinning around one axis like we would usually think of like this. It is an intrinsic property to whatever particle we're talking about. Okay. So yeah. So these are some of the features that spin has. And so yeah, I already mentioned that it's an intrinsic property. It's equivalent to polarization for light. I think you guys have been hearing about waves a lot. You've been hearing about how the electric and magnetic waves are perpendicular. So this is actually analogous to the fact that light is a two-level system as well and has can be spin up or spin down is what the terminology that's used. And so that was a very interesting thing. And so we talk about the photon having spin up or spin down. And it's a good chance you'll hear about this at IQC. And you'll also probably hear about the qubit. And again, a qubit is any, do we have any computer scientists in the room? So you guys have heard about a classical bit. And a bit is any two-level system that has 0 and 1 as the two levels. Well, because, for example, the most common particles that we deal with have spin negative one-half or positive one-half, which makes them two-level systems. And so we deal a lot with this kind of system. And so this is a lot of the basis for quantum computing, is that we're dealing with trying to figure out physical systems for qubits, or a quantum bit. And so spin comes in a big role. So this idea of the Stern-Gerlach apparatus that that gives you a measurement that's either up or down is very much, it becomes logic gates, and they build up this whole idea of computing this way. It's also just weird, but that might be a matter of opinion. So this is NMR is a nuclear. Sorry, yeah?
Are quantum logic gates different than classical logic
gates? Only in the results.
Oh.
Because different things happen, but yeah, it's just logic gates. So NMR is magnetic resonance. There you go. So roughly the idea is that this can be used to survey and find out the spectra of different types of materials based on spin and the spin of the kinds of molecules. So I've got a very rough procedure here. You count the number of protons, you count the number of neutrons, and you probe with electromagnetic radiation. And this way you get, you can predict the kind of spectra you'll get. And you get a characteristic spectra for each kind of counting of these proton numbers of protons and neutrons. So the spin of a molecule is dependent very much on the parity of the protons and neutrons. So that parity is determined by even and odd numbers. So if you have an even number of protons, they'll align always in opposite to each other, so you'll actually get a canceling out to be a zero spin overall. But if you have an odd number, you'll actually get that spin one, spin one half of the proton. And the same thing with the neutrons. Sorry, yet? No, you're right. So this has to do with Pauli exclusion principle. But the protons and neutrons, when there are, say, an odd number of both of them, they'll combine to make spin one. But again, that just allows for another spectra to show up when you probe with an EM radiation. And again, we still see that when we get the signal back, for example. So the reason we get this sort of signal back is because spin gives rise to a magnetic moment. Sorry, we had a fun?
I just wanted to announce that we have to stop a little bit early.
Okay.
Because the rainbow for us kind of fell through, so we're going to take you guys in a van under 1 or 2 minutes. So it's actually going to take 3 trips to get us to the IQC. And it's super hot, and we're going to walk for half an hour. So we're going to take 3 trips, so we're going to be really, really orderly, super efficient. So basically, we need to be in the parking lot at 2:30. So we'll be sort of grabbing that.
So spin gives rise to a magnetic moment with a proportionality constant called the gyromagnetic ratio. This is just so that you see that you do get a magnetic field, and it's this ratio that helps define the spectra and help you define what kind of materials you're seeing. It's just this idea of the characteristic frequencies that you start to see, and it helps you identify things. And so this is a very useful probing technique, and so they do work with this technique at the IQC. And I didn't do a closing slide, so that's it. So are there any questions?
So you have an NMR as a means of identifying an atom?
Mm-hmm.
Do you use it on molecules?
Yes.
Does kind of like a molecule like that have a spin number?
The shape of the molecule.
Well, say you've got like an atom, right? You're having radiation that it's just one atom. But if you have, I don't know, an algae molecule, how does it affect the spectrum?
I'm not really sure. I don't work with NMR directly. I kind of work at the very theoretical level, so I can give you the theory basis for it. That's a good question to save for the experimentalists. Yeah. Any other questions while she reads? I've got another one.
So, other than spin, I guess the number of photons in the kind of speculation
number? Yeah. No. Well, not directly, because the idea with the spin is that they cancel to give you zero spin.
So if you had an atom with 2 neutrons and 2 protons, so like helium, and you had something with 4 and 4, would they give the same spectrum?
know, but I think there's other ways of telling them apart at that point. Sure. I think there's other ways of telling them apart at that point.
Okay.
So yeah, that's kind of an obvious one. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Does it matter how far that the molecule, I mean, the atoms are apart? Like, pronouns? Because you said the spin of the molecules depend on the constituent.
Mm-hmm. So how far which is?
Yeah. When does that break down?
Sorry. So you're saying how far two different atoms are apart? Or
you know, like two atoms in the same molecule?
Yeah.
The neutron. So if you have like two atoms with an odd number of neutrons inside the same molecule, then we can't reach that
way. Sorry, say that again?
It's like a molecule with two atoms in it,
and each atom had an odd number of neutrons.
Okay.
And each got one extra neutron, but those neutrons can't go each other's spin.
No, and this is a helpful thing for isotopes and that kind of work. So, if that's your question, this is used very, very heavily with isotopes. That's what you mean. So different numbers of neutrons that would be normally used with the number of protons.
Could you use this to separate isotopes?
To which? Sorry.
Like separate. If you can tell apart, can you use the separation method?
A separation method, as in, like, say this is like you can identify them. So, insofar as you can identify them, it's useful. Yeah, I mean, you can identify them, and so
yeah.
Whatever they use them for best is. Again, I'm a theorist. Sorry. Yeah. Be controlled? You can only have, well, it's characteristic based on spin. This is the point, is that the frequencies that we see are what help us identify what the substance is.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest particle that's been done with? I don't know. No idea. Ask experimentalists. this is just sort of how, what's the framework for basing it on? You know, like this is sort of the theory. So this is how it works. Things like that, you know, I'm not sure. I really don't. I know how the kind of basic science works behind it.
Are you throwing the nucleus or the atom as a whole?
Well, you probe the nucleus, but it's the atom as a whole.
So, yeah, like there's a...
No. You have different reactions with the exclusion principle with fermions, and so there's a whole different kind of set of phenomenology with fermions because of the Pauli exclusion principle works a whole different way. So this is just working with bosonic bosonic phenomenology.
Explain how a qubit does calculations
by entanglement. That's the short answer.
Is there
a long answer? Can I explain how they do computations? So.
Might be helpful to talk about a controlled NOT gate. I don't know.
Yeah.
So like a NOT gate, the difference between a NOT gate and a controlled NOT gate, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. My knowledge of quantum computing is not great, quite frankly. I sort of know it as sort of a peripheral thing that I can sit down and do it with a textbook if I need to, if I really, really have to. But it's not something I prefer to do. I can avoid it at all costs. like really at all costs. So I would really refer you to somebody else. I would not feel comfortable answering that question at this stage. I would rather look it up in a book before having to answer it. Just, I know the basics, but I don't want to answer on the spot. If you'd like, I can bring the answer tonight to the Sutra session. Or if Richard, you, like, I see on Facebook, I'm not my friend. Like, I know the basic principles.
So, okay, so.
Yeah. that's all I feel about it.
Okay, so basically, it's like this. So if we're talking about like quantum computing and all that kind of stuff, so in terms of the physics, what they're basically doing is they have a particle with spin. So it's either an electron or it spins on a few waves or something like that. So it has angular momentum. And you can think of it as something, a ball that's charged, that's spinning. And so if I have, say, for example, a current here, you have a current. What do I get out of that? What does that create? A negative field. Okay, so basically a spinning particle doesn't actually have to be charged, but spinning particles have a negative moment, sort of certain spinning particles, the electron and all the media and so on. So you can think of it as a spinning bar magnet. And then what you can do is you can take that spinning bar magnet. So better to just do it this way. Okay, so it's like an old cell magnet like that, which is spinning. And then those are spinning top. And then you put this thing in a magnetic field. So the magnetic field. So when you go to the IPC, you're going to see this. You can see this quantum computer, and it looks just like this great big beer cake, and it's filled with liquid hydrogen, which cools it down, so it cools the sample down, etc., and also cools the superconducting wire through which a large amount of current is generated to create or push through to create this strong magnetic field. So you put this sample inside the strong magnetic field, and a magnet, this is a known self magnet, that's I put it in a magnetic field, just in a compass, it's gonna turn and align with the magnetic field. So the low energy state is the one where it's aligned, and the high energy state is the one where it's anti-aligned. Okay, so you've got, so this is where it's aligned, and the opposite possibility is, the north is down, you just turn the whole thing down, and ground is anti-aligned. So these are two different energy states. One is low energy, one is high energy. So you can think of it as just sort of a two-state system like this. And what you can do is, you can make chemicals just like an atom. An atom can be in the ground state or the excited state. And how do you get it from the ground state to the excited state? You shoot in a photon with exactly this amount of energy, and then you can get it from the ground state to the excited state. So in the same way, when the magnet is anti-aligned like this, if you fire in a photon of this energy, difference here, it turns out to be microwave or radio wave frequency photons. If you fire in that frequency of photon, then you can change the state from this to this excited state. And similarly, when it's in the excited state, it can decay down to the ground state. And you can, but what's really cool, so that's how you can get the classical computer just being in one state or the other state. With a quantum computer, you can put it into a state which is a superposition of this. And then what you do is, this is just very roughly speaking, what you do is you have, say, atoms here. Here's an atom, here's an atom. two atoms inside a complicated molecule. So the molecule that's used for IPC is something like, it has 12 atoms. The molecule itself is bigger, so it's some big complicated molecule. And there are a bunch of atoms in there. And maybe half of those atoms are active or useful for the calculation. So you have inside there the nucleus. The heart of the atom is the nucleus. So you have these little nuclear spins here. And what you can do is, because, so as Tony was saying, there are different natural frequencies for these spots. So you can address, in a sense, you can do it address each individual bit in that molecule separately. So this has a frequency of, 57.625 megahertz or something like that. This is 62.758 megahertz or whatever. And so you can, by using radio frequencies of different wavelengths here, so microwave photons of different wavelengths, you can address those individual bits. Like when you're in a computer, like how do you address the different bits? You have, say, a register that's 8 bits in size. So physically, a register is, say, a transistor, which can be on or off, which is a capacitor, which is high or low, and there's wires, right, going in there. And then you can put a voltage on this wire or a voltage on that wire, whatever, and you can address those individual bits. If when you're on the computer, those individual bits are nucleotic atoms, how do you actually address them individually? And you address them by hitting them with different radio frequencies. They won't respond to one or the other radio frequency. So that's one thing. The other thing is each one of these nuclear spins here has its own magnetic field. So that's the important part, is that the magnetic field of this guy is creating a magnetic field. And this guy is in the presence of that guy's magnetic field. Okay, so there's actually the main magnetic field that they're all present in, but then this guy's feeling this guy's magnetic field. Okay, so when this guy is spinning up like this, then the magnetic field from it over here is down. Okay, when this guy is flipped the other way around, then the magnetic field this guy's appearance is up. Okay, and that affects this one. So when I put a magnet, if I have a spinning top, if it's a spinning top, let's say before it starts spinning, it just has this shape. If I let this thing go, what's it going to do?
Fall.
Okay, so when I, in other words, when I put a torque on it, so here's the center of gravity, and gravity goes down like that, the force this way doesn't matter, the force that way matters. Okay, so that's exerting a twisting force on this, and it'll just fall over. Okay, but if this thing is spinning, then there's an momentum in this direction, and what happens now? I have a spinning top, it's a bit of an angle, and I let it go, what's it going to do?
It'll
wobble. What's the close?
Inside.
90% recess. Okay, so it'll recess. Okay, so what it'll do is about this axis, it will just spin like this and recess. Okay? And so what's really important here is all of these nuclear spins, they're in this magnetic field and they are recessing. Okay? And the rate at which they're recessing depends upon the strength of the magnetic field. So if I have a spinning top like this and it's recessing, and I hit a magic button where I increase the strength of the Earth's gravitational field by a factor of 2, we all get heavier, and this thing spins faster. Okay, so the rate at which this processes depends on the strength of the magnetic field. So it's already in this very strong overall field, but then the rate at which it processes depends in detail on whether this is a spin up, I need to decrease the magnetic field very slightly, or spin down, I need to increase that magnetic field slightly. And that's the part of quantum computation, is the way that these bits can interact with each other. Okay, so you can make, so it's a little bit, I don't want to give all the details of that, but you can make logic gates out of this kind of thing. Okay, so these are sort of like your inputs and outputs. So a NOT gate, something. So here's a do-nothing gate. So I put a zero in here, and a zero comes out here. So I put a one in, and then a one comes out like that. And the symbol for a do-nothing gate is that. Okay? And then a not gate is the symbol for the logic symbol is that. Put a zero there, and it reverses it. So if I put in a zero, I get a one out. I put in a one, I get a zero out. So this is a super, super simple kind of even gate, because it's sort of a building block for a gate. And then a control not gate, something like this. So when you put a zero in here, then this thing functions as a do nothing. It just functions like that. Zero in, zero out, one in, one out. If I put in a one here, then I make it a not gate. Zero in, one out, one in, zero out. Okay, so it's an extremely simple gate. So it actually has two inputs, these two inputs, and these two outputs. And it turns out that if you can construct a gate like this, then you can, I'm not sure if this is a universal gate. There's another universal gate. So there is a set of a very small set of gates. So for example, if you have classical level, how many of you know a little bit about gates, computer gates? Okay, so what are the early ones? So the basic gates are, so this gate here, these are the two inputs and that's the output. There are two inputs and an output. And this is a NAND gate. It's 230. We need to do something longer. Anyways, okay, so basically what the quantum computer does is if you can realize just a very basic case, then you can construct in principle, in theory, any kind of quantum computation. And you realize that physically with these things. So that's the main thing. So, yeah.